brilliance. Even Einstein was hesitant to go, and he had to leave continent and go into America. That you must be known, the greatest man in the world, Einstein, in the science and field of science. So that apart from this political career of a man, we must know that he was a Jew, and a Jew of great understanding, great common sense. I may tell you by way of digression how great he was, Spinoza. There was a suit regarding a big financial amount between him and his sister. You see. And his sister has usurped the money. He brought a suit against in a court of law against his sister. And he won. The whole property became Spinoza's property. Then he called his sister. "You are my sister, you take away this property. I do not want it." Just see the greatness of the man. He brought a suit against his own sister, won the case, had the whole property in his name, and gave that property to his sister again. "You are my sister. Why? I am not going to have it. You have the whole property." And himself, he granted the lands and filled his belly. You see. But there are people who fill their belly first and think that it is the last word. What is your occupation? Filling the belly. What will you do till the end? Fill the belly. From the start, filling the belly. Now, filling the belly. And to the cremation ground, also filling the belly. You see. That is the difference between a great man and a small man. We are all pygmies before Spinoza. Spinoza was such a giant so far as generosity was concerned. His intellect was concerned, you see. This is by the way I tell you how you should know biography also of a man. You see, a philosopher is not a philosopher in the classroom. A philosopher must be a philosopher for 24 hours. I give prize from that point of view to Hume. Though he is a skeptic, he was throughout a skeptic. In his private life he was skeptic, in his public life he was skeptic. He was one of the most straightforward and honest men in the world. Hume, I say, David Hume, about whom I have very little, but for his honesty and his straightforwardness, I say that I shall give him the first prize, because he was throughout straightforward, no dishonesty. In the classroom you are a big professor, and afterwards in the afterlife you are no professor. You don't read, you don't go to the library, you don't discuss, you have no seminars, you have no interest. But in the increments, but in your salaries, on the first day of the month, if you are aware that you are a professor, then you have no professor at all. And this should be the ideal before us, that we are from cradle, or from at least the cradle of our understanding, to the end of our life, we are students and students. If you have that ability, you are students of philosophy. Otherwise, you are nothing but, as our political leaders say, that what do they say? That broad-based, job-oriented. You see, the first sentence which I heard from Professor Anand was, "Philosophy does not bake bread, but philosophy teaches us the value of bread." Nobody wants the value of bread now. They want bread. They don't want the value of bread. Great men have taught us that you are not living by bread alone. So many times Professor Varane used to say, Jesus said also to his disciples several times, "It is not by bread alone that you live." Look to the sparrows. Look to the birds of the wing. Do they care for tomorrow? Bread will come automatically. If God will give you. God has given you life and bread will be there. But our philosophy students should not be after this. If they are, they should leave philosophy. I would advise them from this. With all the responsibility I have, I am a teacher of philosophy, and I used to say every year to my students, "Have you come here for the purpose of seeking job? Leave my class." If there be any such student who is thinking that he would be a great professor, let him leave the job, let him leave the class at once. He is not a student, fit student of philosophy. But if he wants to know what is the secret of life, what is the secret of nature, what is the secret, and what is the spiritual life, then let him be a philosopher throughout his life, you see. Let things come or whatever. Don't be only aware of the first of every month and of the increments. I may tell you of my own life a thing that I served for 13 years in the Rimaraj College at Belgaum, but and there was my friend, great friend, and just below my name, it was his name. I never looked within 13 years what was his salary. I never knew it. I do not know even today what my sons are earning. It is sufficient if I get my bread every day. That's all. I do not know even my sons in America what they get. Why should I? Let them get anything. If they send me some money, that's all, that is enough. Or if they don't send him, somebody of you will send me, that is enough. Why should I care who sends me the money? It is God who sends me the money, not anyone, one of you. I shall be thankful to God, and thankful to God for giving you the thing that you have given me. So ultimately I must be thankful to God. In everywhere if you find what is the truth about this, then you are a student of philosophy, not otherwise. But by the way of digression, of course, this much I take this much latitude of the lecturer and just tell you by the way. Leave it if you like. You see, you didn't need not mind it, because I am just voicing what I feel sincerely about you. And I have said it to my students and say it so many times. That why do you care for the bread? Beg. Do the service in a chamar's shop and fill your belly. Do the service of washing the utensils in a dhaba and eat your bread. If you want, if you are reduced to that situation, why do you fill your banks? Money enjoyed is money earned, not money earned and kept in the bank is earned. This is a wrong idea. Not in the least. To go running after money, let money come running after you, not money. Let money come or not, what does it matter? You are a student of, you can say, you are at the altar of you say, and the goddess of learning. So there is nothing. If Lakshmi wants to come, let her come or go away. I don't care for her. That should be ideal, and you find that money will run after you. Whatever money is required, you will get. To keep the soul and body together, you will get that much if God has given you. But your endeavor must be to find out the spiritual steps in which the great saints have gone. That is your ideal. And for that purpose, I am speaking to you. Otherwise, I have no business. The wages, I told you even on the first day, the wages is a very small thing for me. Somebody suggested to me, I should give a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita. It will cost, I said, because I am also a man of the world. What will be your remuneration? Not less than 200 rupees a lecture, I said yesterday. I told, if you want from me a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita, every lecture, I shall give even 20 lectures on the Bhagavad Gita, but 20 into 200, you must give me the money. Nobody won't, but then they will wait. Well, will we have a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita or this parting of the money? We need not part with the money. We shall part with it. We are all right. Without the lectures, we can go on. But without money, we cannot go on. That is your outlook. You see, that is what I want to suggest to you by the way that you must do it in this manner. So Spinoza thought that the geometrical method will be the most suitable method for philosophy. Once you start with the axiomatic principles, then there will be nothing to give. You will go straight away to God. And he makes the start with substance. I do not find any better definition of substance than which has given by the Spinoza. He was God intoxicated from the beginning, and that is the thing. Because he was God intoxicated, here I have given this definition. I said, but in that definition, substance is that which is conceived in itself and which exists by itself. I should say, if one understands the meaning of this definition, it is enough. You need not listen to my lectures at all afterwards. Substance is that, and he equated substance meaning God. God is he who is conceived in himself and who exists by himself. Who exists by himself? No, there is no necessity of any other thing existing by himself, because that will be limitation upon God. If any other thing exists, God exists, and if any other thing exists, then that thing will limit the power of God. And who will conceive God? There is none in the world except God conceiving himself. God conceiving himself, we find no doubt in so far as Aristotle is concerned. Aristotle thinks of God as contemplating upon himself. What is pure form without matter? What is the matter of the pure form? Nothing but form. Form is the matter and form is the form. So God contemplates upon himself. Atman should see the Atman. The substance should see the substance. Substance conceived by himself. I conceive. He is not like the Edmund Burke. He conceived three times, but God brought forth nothing. You see. Probably it is Edmund Burke, I believe, who became the greatest scientist, is it not? I am sure it is Edmund Burke, who was the greatest parliamentarian and the greatest orator of the world. He spoke for the first time in the parliament, I conceive, and then sat down. And another man, parliament, said, he Burke conceived thrice, but brought forth no offspring. Really. Brought forth nothing. And he became the greatest orator of England. But what is the conceal? God conceives. What is his offspring? Another God. What is his offspring? Another God. Another God. Another God. And so on and so on. We are the offsprings of God. So we must also be God-like. That is the lesson which is implied in Spinoza. This will not be told by anybody else except Dr. Nowhere on the world you will find this. Therefore, I say to you that God conceives himself, meaning that God conceives and brings forth also God. You see, one flame is there. What will it do? It will bring forth another flame. It will bring forth a third flame. It will bring a fourth flame, and so on, ad infinitum. It will bring numerous, innumerable flames. It is not the handing of one torch, as our political leaders do, as freedom torch. Freedom torch meaning I hand it over to him. So there is darkness on my side and there is light. And then he hands it over to the third man. There is darkness on that side and there is light. It is not that. It is the light from this place to the all. If I hand that flame of light, it will be all the lamps will be burned. And if all the lamps will be burned, the whole hall will be lit up with light. That is the idea which Spinoza has when he starts with the geometrical method. You must understand what is at the core of things. You are not understanding Spinoza for the purpose of examination is different from understanding him really. If you start, for example, if in a procession, for example, the first drum beater is there, a catcher there, oh, Raja ki procession. How do you know that Raja may not be there at all? It may be only a photograph of that Raja. But Raja, from the first drum beater to the last drum beater on the camel, there is the procession. Which part of that procession is not the king's procession, I ask? It is the entire, from the beginning to the end. That is Spinoza. If you understand that it is the king's procession from the beginning to the end, it is the procession of God, the king among kings, who is there from the beginning to the end. God at the start, God in the middle, God at the end. That is Spinoza. So he is God intoxicated from the beginning to the end. You should be philosophers from beginning to the end of your life. Grita iva kesheshu mrityuna dharma mācare ajara maravat prajñaha vidyam arsanja chintaye. Mai amar hum, mai ajar hum, no old age will come upon me. I am free from death. With this attitude you must have the learning. You must have learning. You see. No, after all, I have to finish 5 or 8 years of my life and then I shall retire. This is not the attitude of learning at all. You should be a lifelong student till you are cremated. You see, I am gone to the cremation ground. You must be a student. Then you are a real student. Otherwise, you are a job-oriented student. You should go to the exchange office, get yourself employed, and done up. That's all. And you should care for your children, babies, and etc. That is all in life. That is not the purpose of life. You see. Vidyamar, grihita iva kesheshu. What does it mean? The Lord of Death has caught you by the hair. And is now cutting your faith. That's what. Till that last moment you should be students. This is what Spinoza has taught. By God, substance is that which conceives itself and which exists by itself. You are existing by what? By that thread. By that thread which is living in you, the pulsation, the last. Till that moment you must remember God. And from the beginning of it. If you are then you are God intoxicated. Spinoza was such God intoxicated person. And therefore he could do, therefore he could be so generous and give his entire property to his sister. Otherwise he would have kept half of his property in the bank, half of his property in some place, and half of his property on dress, and the lucky stores he would have gone. But that is not Spinoza. Spinoza gave entire property to his sister. I do not want it. I only wanted to point out that the truth is on my side, and therefore I went to a court of law. That's all. That was Spinoza. You learn the lives of these. If you learn only the philosophy, it is not proper. You learn the lives of these great philosophers, and you will come to know that an honest philosopher has no bifurcation between the life on the one hand and philosophy on the other. Philosophy is the counterpart of the life, and his life is the counterpart of it. What a man does in his outward. I know a man who went to a place of pilgrimage, and he was there for 24 hours doing the work of God, meditating on God. I say to him, what you do, not for one day, what you do throughout the year, that is more important, my friend, than what you have done for one day. If you do meditation for 24 hours in a place, then he is not a prisoner doing it in his cell. He is also confined in a cell, and he also is there. What have you done more, as I said to you? But this much language, of course, came from me and not from anybody. I say, what you do throughout the year, that is more important than what you do throughout a week or a month, just to show to others that you are a devotee of God. That is not at all. You are not a devotee at all, I say. You have just shown to me or to the world that you have been in a particular place for 24 hours and devoted yourself in meditation of God. You do it for half an hour at fixed periods. Let anything happen in the world, you are not concerned with it. You are concerned with God alone. If you do it for half an hour throughout the year, that is more important than what you do in a particular week or on a particular day. So that is Spinoza. Spinoza is the greatest man so far as the discovery of God is concerned. He made the discovery not like Descartes, he looked into himself. No, he looked upward first, and he found God. And then he found God everywhere, and then he found God inside also. So that was Spinoza. God at the beginning, God in the middle, and God at the end. And this discovery of his, he put it in a philosophical form, which is very useful for you as students for examination. What did he say? There are two things, two modes, two attributes which man can understand of the infinite attributes of God. Ananta guna. What are the infinite attributes of God? We do not know. Man only knows two attributes, namely thought and extension. Thought and extension. All these things in the universe are extended. They have dimensions. Can you have thought? I say 3 inches thought length, 2 inches breadth. Can you put such dimensions to your thought? No. So dimensionless thought and dimensions with dimensions, the things extended. There are things extended in the world, and there are things which have no extension at all, dimensionless thought. Just the same thing again, revival of matterless form and formless matter. Matter is extended and form is not extended. But in Aristotle, form is real, matter is unreal. In Spinoza, both are real. That is the difference between Aristotle and Spinoza. You must always compare one philosopher with another philosopher so that they both will be linked together. Otherwise, if you think, now we have finished this, or let us now go with Spinoza. And what you learn? Substance, thought, extension, thought into feeling and willing, extension into rest and motion. He said, that is good for me. Examination, no doubt. If you write like that, then the examiner will be pleased. Oh, this boy seems to be very learned, very intelligent. Give him full marks. Has he understood the background on which the background I have given you first? You see. And now, in order to make it understandable to others, he put it in that form, in the suspense, and then again, thought and extension. And thought he divides into what is known as modes. Modes means the manner of living, the modification of the substance alone, the modification not of the attribute, the modification of the substance. Substance divided into thought and extension. What is that thought? Thought is nothing but a point of view. You look at that substance from your introspection. Look at this point, from this point, oh, how beautiful. The wall doesn't crumble. How is it? For 50 years it has been there, and it doesn't crumble. What is the secret of this? Who is there? Then you will say, of the gravitation, the law of gravitation. Who made it? And that way you will come ultimately to God. So things extended will remind you of God, and things not extended will remind you of God. Look at any from any point of view you like, from the point of view of the world or nature, or from the point of view of your own self, you will find nothing but God. In mind is God resides, and in nature is God resides. We need not require a verse to tell us that the daffodils and the lilies are only. Look at anything in the world. Look at the vast dust here, a handful of dust. What has Newton said? You will find that not even a speck of dust you can produce. And this has been produced. Hundreds and hundreds of miles there is desert and desert. One who looks at the desert will remember God. He need not go to a factory, as Rabindranath Tagore has said, or he need not go to a temple, as our priestcraft tells us. He should stand where it is. Look at this. Look at this chair. Look at this. Look at these, all these horses. What are they? They are nothing but the symbols of God. They may make me remember God. If you find that, where is the need of going to the temples and waving the lights and ringing the bells? There is no need at all. You see. So, what I say is that whether you look at nature outside or whether you look at the nature inside, you find nothing but God. That is Spinoza. And whether you look to this attribute from the point of view of thought, oh, how beautiful. You have given me these various thoughts in my mind. I am thankful to you, God. You will go down your head. You will find beautiful flowers, beautiful things in the world, soft things, hard things, any number of things, crushing things. And then, how wonderful it is that you have created so many things. This was the lesson which was given by the Almighty God to Job. But you have nothing to do with Job. Why should you touch Job at all, the Holy Bible? You see, I say, I am not a student of Bible. But you read the Bible. You see, I don't know whether your teachers have told you, but I tell you today, read the Bible. And then you will know. You will find God in it also. You see, read the Bible. There is a story of Job. He had hundreds, thousands of camels and thousands of sheep and thousands of... He was the richest man in the whole world. And then the devil came and took the permission of the God and said, then let me test. God said, yes, test. And he was tested that all his camels died and sheep died and he was reduced to poverty. Then the devil said, what of that? His soul is not, his body is there as strong as that. Then God said, well, don't kill him. But then he was then afflicted with severe and sores, boils were there, and the pus and blood, impure blood was coming out, and he had sack, and then he began to grumble, because he was a man of the world, Job. What have I done against God that he should reduce me to this plight? He said to his friend, and ultimately God came. I shall ask him, I have the courage to ask him. And when God came, he said, Mr. Job, were you there when I created the oceans? Were you there when you created the mountains? Were you there when I created the flowers of the valley? And Job said, no, no. Then, when I have given you all this, whose power it is? Then he surrendered to God. Yes, God, it is you who have. So that thought came to Job. The greatest thing in the world, in the Old Testament. You read it if you like. you see. At least for me, you read it and remember me, you see, along with Job, you see, and along with God, and along with your teachers in the teachers of philosophy in the university. And then estimate whether God is greater, or I am greater, or your teachers are greater, or your examination is greater. You will carry tuppence for your examination. I don't want your examination. Let there be degrees or not, let me be great. You will say to yourself. That will be the ideal of a student, not passing of an examination. You see. Examinations will pass. I regret very much if I can take for, you see, 2,000 rupees, all my degrees, and if I be said I am a non-metric, I shall be able to specify. I don't want all these degrees. Because they are nothing but useless feathers in my cap. Useless feathers. What are they? Nothing. Absolutely. It's just a straw. So you must rise to that level to understand what you are. And that you can do only with the discovery of God. Then whether you are at rest or whether you are active, what is that? Activity as well as that, both are given us by God. Bacon has made that discovery. When he said contemplation and rest, contemplation and activity are the two modes of life which Bacon has given us. Francis Bacon. That you must alternate between activity and contemplation. Yeto dhop suke phironi uthato hi ishwarachi daya. A man says in Marathi, poet says, I kanane dolane pato. This is long, he says, four lines in that stanza. He says, I am seeing by the sight, I am hearing it, whose grace it is. And I am sleeping, and if I sleep, I do not die, but get again, and I remember all these things. By whose power it is, God? Have you ever thought about this? I do not think, because you have no time to think about these things. You see, read very little, but think more, and then you will come to understand that you have something to discover, namely the footprints of God. Footprints of God everywhere. Everywhere you will find. Even the most villain person, you will find the footprints of God. Even in a drunkard, you will find the footprints of God. There is nothing, no evil in the world. It is evil, that is the evil which is a fall from God. Just as Adam, for example, has a fall from God because he disobeyed God. That was an infringement of God. Therefore, Adam was guilty of that. So let us not be guilty of that and repeat. So the same thing has been said by Spinoza, there is nothing good and bad in the world. It is the mind of man which makes it so. There is nothing good and bad in the world. Because in the good also there is God, and in the evil also there is God. But we have to discover God. Otherwise evil will be with us and good will not be with us. If we do not find God, then we shall be evil-minded only. That is it. Spinoza says there is nothing good and bad in itself, it is the mind of man which makes it so. And the same has been said afterward by Leibniz also. So, the things are, then he has said what he has discovered in a conceptual form, substance, thought, and extension, that the attributes and the viewpoints from which you look at God. And then thought is divided into feeling and willing, and the extension is divided into rest and motion. So these are the modifications of what? Not of the point of view can it be, because it is a point of view whether you look from this side or whether you look from this side. I can see you from this side, I can look and see you at this point of view. Whichever point of view you accept, whether you are a materialist, you must find God. Whether you are a conceptualist or you can say a psychologist, you must find God. But we are warring against himself that where is God? We shall say some communists may come forward, only shake his head, and then there will be hair will fall on two sides, and then he has a long tongue, and he will say there is no God. Because he has not used the point of view, he has not used the telescope which he has had. He has not observed nature. If you observe nature even, you will find mysteries after mysteries. Why should the sun flower move along with the sun? When the sun moves, the sunflower also becomes blossom. At night, it becomes withered a bit. And as soon as the sun comes on the horizon, it becomes blossom. And then moves on along with the sun from the east to the west. If you have observed this, you alone can realize, how can you know? If you sit in the cloister and just not deny the other, you will not be able to understand this. The dirt, pankaja, meaning the lotus, where does it grow? In a dirty bottle. Panka. In a dirty bottle it grows. And lotus flower grows in it. The dirt is there and the dirt is there. Just see, observe it. And then you will find that at the udders of the cow, there are insects, so many insects, eating the blood. But the calf drinks the milk at the udders of the cow. Now why is this? Inside there is milk and outside there is blood. At the same udders of the cow, who has done this miracle? You will find there is some higher power. Not the udders of the cow are responsible, but there is something else. That the insects find out only blood of the body of cow, and the calf finds only milk to nourish his body. What is this miracle? Even on the fifth day, the mother gives milk to her child. What is this miracle? So these are several miracles which have to be observed, and one has to learn. Spinoza probably has, I think, must have understood first, and then for us, who are intellectuals, who are rational, and who take boast of our intellect, for them he has written this. You read this philosophy, that's all, nothing more. So Spinoza has found God at the beginning. He has conceived as God would conceive of himself. He has become one with God and seen himself. He is existing, yes. Spinoza alone is existing because Spinoza is God and God alone is existing. And what is nature and what is mind? It is nothing but God. So that he finds that there is nothing but parallelism between mind on one side and on the other. Just as there is parallel rails, where do they meet? They meet at the extremity, at the end. Just as you stand on the rail side, and you will find that they are converging. And they converge, and at the distance, it appears as if the two rails meet each other. Two parallel lines. Where do they meet? They meet in the eternity of God. So Spinoza has seen this dream. You and I must see this dream along with Spinoza, then alone we can understand within a minute, within a day, twinkling of an eye, his entire philosophy. I am taking you to the root of things. I am not taking only to the branches and here and there, pluck the flower. Just go to the root and you will find that everything is there. You will understand in twinkling of an eye what you cannot and could not understand within half a century. Then afterwards Spinoza, there comes to this Leibniz. Just see that Descartes, Spinoza and Leibniz, they go to form one group known as the rationalist group. That Leibniz comes and he says Spinoza is wrong. Everybody has his own point of view, but all of them are following the same road. They are all following the same road, the rationalistic road. But everybody has his own point of view. Leibniz says Spinoza would have been correct had there been no monad. But I come forward, you see, with a monology, monadology, monad. What did he say? What is this geometry? He says? The geometrical point is an ideal point which cannot be drawn on the blackboard. If the moment you draw on the blackboard, it has got dimensions. So the mathematical point you can never demonstrate on a blackboard. You have to, in order to aid as an understanding, for you to understand what is meant by a point, I make it like this dot. This is mathematics. If you do not understand, then I say the intersecting point, that is the point. But Leibniz would say that is not the mathematical point. That is a physical point. I see by the eye. The mathematical point cannot be seen by the eye, but understood by the intellect. The mathematical point can be understood by the intellect. That physical thing on the blackboard or corresponding to which there is the atom, for example, that is physical in nature. So he says, my Munayar is neither physical nor mathematical. Then what is its nature? It is spiritual. Just as Spinoza starts with God, similarly Leibniz starts with Leibniz, with Monad, which is nothing but spiritual in nature. It is neither a physical atom nor a mathematical point. The mathematical point is imaginary. Is imaginary. And therefore you can say it is unreal also. The physical point, it can be seen, cognized by the eye, but cannot be cognized by blind mind. You see, and it too is perishable. You can wash out what we have written on the blackboard. So that physical atom, physical point also is perishable. It is not living. But my monad is spiritual, and therefore you cannot wipe it out. It must be understood by intellect, and it cannot be written on the blackboard. Then what is this monad? And he gives a number of things. Every one of it, where is this located? Everywhere. There is not a single room where it is not. It is all pervading. Hundreds and thousands, infinite monads are there. Infinite monads. There is no vacuum. You see, there is no vacuum. The so-called vacuum of science, for example, in the what is known as that, if you have a vessel and take out it, it is all right. Minimum of air that is considered with science as vacuum. There is no vacuum in the world. Even that space, the so-called vacuum, is filled with infinite monads. That is what Leibniz says against Spinoza. There are not only two attributes, but infinite attributes, you see, which man may not be remembering, but they are. Why don't you say that they are? Are they just to be eliminated, thrown away? So Spinoza would have been right had there been no monads. There are monads, infinite monads. There is no space, there is no void. There is no void. Remember this, by the way, that the Buddhist philosophy which ends its void is no philosophy, spiritual philosophy at all. I was asked this question when I became the head of the philosophy department by the Public Service Commission. Why has Buddhism failed? I said, because they had no cognition of God. How do you say this is it? Buddhism is always yes, sir. Otherwise they would not have said anatma. This is an abuse, I said. And then they were confused. Anatma. Anatmavadi. How can it be? There is nothing. Nothing anatma. Everything is atma. So there is anatman, if they say, the Buddha has said it is the world of anatman, then that very moment he has crushed himself, he is suicidal, I say. This is suicidal. I gave that reply to the Public Service Commission. I remember that. So there is no void. There is no void at all, Leibniz says. And the so-called void is filled with monads. And he used a very beautiful thing, just as the pond is filled with fish. Similarly, the universe is filled with monads. Is it not pluralism? It is pluralism. But no, he says, it is not pluralism. It appears from outside that it is there are hundreds and infinite monads. But no, just as there are infinite bees, and there is one drone, that is, the male is one, but the female bees are hundreds and thousands of them. Hundreds and thousands of bees are there, but one, there is governor, one male above, that is in the beehive. If you have studied, you have known it, and our scientists may say that it is not the bees, that is, some are males, hundreds are males, and hundreds are females, that is not. All of us, excepting one, are all female bees, and one is female. That is the Purusha. That is the Purusha. Similarly, God is there, and all are females, you see. Just by the way of analogy, I am saying it, that there is God. Where is he located? In the central. Just as you have with central telephone exchange, if you want a number, you just ring the bell. Give the number, please, and he knows, and he gives the number. Similarly, you have to just call upon God, And when you know it, you will know everything else in the world. Because that central telephone exchange gives all the numbers of the world. And you have simply to contact him. So going, if you want to know one monad, for example, I am monad, and you are a monad. Then if I want to know what is contained in your mind, I should go to God, central telephone exchange. Because he knows your mind and my mind. And therefore he says, what do you want? I want to know something about where she is now. She is at California. Immediately there. I need not even talk with you. He sees it. So by knowing God, I can locate you where you are. That is the function of the central telephone exchange house. Otherwise, now the exchange houses are meant for taking bribery and then to give you a certificate that he has seen me and given me an employment, etc. So on both sides there is bribery. And these are bribery houses, not telephone exchange houses. But Rabbani has the central monad for this purpose. If you want to love your neighbor, you must love God first. You can't love your neighbor unless you love God. Why? Because your neighbor also must love God and you also must love. You must meet there. And then, oh, he is my brother. All right, I shall love him from. You have to know your brothers and sisters by knowing God. This was exactly how Jesus lived. Jesus lived exactly in this manner. You know how? Once upon a time, when Jesus came, and then his mother and sisters and brothers all came to see him. And then somebody said, they were all disciples and gathering, a huge gathering. Jesus, your mother and brothers and sisters have come. Where are my brothers and sisters? Pointing to the disciples, these are my brothers and sisters, he said. This you read in the Bible. Now this will be waste reading if you don't understand the meaning behind it. One who loves God is your brother. One who does not love God is your enemy. This is exactly what has been said by Kotivaira Sama, through by Tushidas also has said the same thing. Because he is your, no, the saint has no relative. Similarly, the monad has no relative except God. And those who come into the chamber of God, they are his relatives. This is what Jesus has said. These are not my relatives. My mother and sisters, they are not my relatives. These are my relatives, meaning the disciples are my relatives. They are my sisters and brothers. And he went with them, carrying a fig for the actual relatives. This was done by Jesus. Because Jesus was also God intoxicated. And the disciples were taught to be God intoxicated. Therefore, they became his disciples. Similarly, as students of philosophy, you must remember that those who are interested in philosophy are your co-students. Others are not. I am speaking with this ideal that all of you who are in this hall are my students, or are my teachers. In one way, you can teach me or I can teach you. Because we are in one game. We are engaged in one game, finding out the truth. And that ultimate truth is God. So Leibniz found this ultimate truth in the central monad. You see, in spite of the fact that each monad has got the capacity of mirroring the entire universe. That is what it is, representation of the entire universe. If there is a mirror, it can have the entire mirror the entire universe. But that is not. Who has given this capacity? The capacity is given by God. So if you meet God, then you will not lose this mirroring capacity, but you will gain it all the more. You see, you have just to focus it at this way, that way, that way, that way. But the central monad is a mirror on all sides. You see, so that you need not go any further and meet that another monad. You go to the house of God and you will know everything else. Yajnatva sarvamidam jnayate. Knowing whom you know the entire world. This is the Upanishadic teaching. You see, Leibniz has said that. Leibniz has found out the central monad at the crux of the whole thing, that it is on central monad alone that the whole universe is spending. So, these rationalists, these are known as the rationalists, they have made use of the reason. They have made use of the syllogistic reasoning. And they have speculated upon that, therefore they are known as rationalists. Descartes, and Spinoza and Leibniz. They are known as the rationalist philosophers on account of the fact that they have used the mathematical methods, by the method and the geometrical methods, and then further the same method has been used by Leibniz. He has defined his monad as having several capacities and found out the central monad. So they have the methodology. Methodology is the same. The methodology is the same. They have used it by reason alone. They have not taken into consideration the empirical sciences. They have not taken into consideration the observation and experiment. But they have used their reason mainly as the chief instrument of knowledge, and they have come to the conclusion that God is the be-all and the end of all things. Now, against this, the empiricists come. The empiricists, meaning who believe upon observation and experiment, they come. And they say, what is this reason? They are just formulating the what is known as the cobwebs of imagination. Cobweb of imagination. Just as the spider has his cobweb. Similarly, these persons of the rationalist school, they are just producing cobwebs of their imagination. They are producing certain webs in which the fly grows and nothing comes out of it. The fly would die. If a fly would go in the spider's house, the spider will kill that fly. Similarly, he says, it is the rational school will end in doomsday. The empiricists say that I believe, that they believe in observation and experiment. And they also are three in number, namely Locke, Berkeley, and Hume.